Well, you shouldn't, though. It's our futures in these battery sets. Well, thanks to our energetic production team, Gary Niederhoff, Barbara Vance, and Rena Shaklesko.
Also support from Rena Shulsky-David and Sammy David and the NASA Astrobiology Institute. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, and a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to That's Containment. Now you've learned about the containment industry from us, and you can find more Big Picture Science on iTunes and through the link on our website. And while you're online, why not go to Facebook, become a fan of the program, and leave your comments there as well.
If you're a podcast listener, but you prefer over-the-air radio because, well, it's just uncontained radiative energy floating around your head, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
No power generation at all, Captain. Vol is dead.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn. This is Impact, heard every Tuesday from 1 to 2 on the fourth Tuesday of each month, where you will get information and news about the different things that are going on in your metro area. The following is a pre-recorded for this particular time segment, and the views are not necessarily those of WHFR or Henry Ford Community College.
Over the past 5 years, the American economy has added about 5 million net new jobs. Yet over 11 million Americans remain unemployed. The same is true in countries around the world. Unfilled jobs, but stubbornly high unemployment. One big reason for this is something called the skills gap. What's the skills gap? Here's an example. Meet Sally. Sally owns a company that manufactures widgets. New technologies make Sally more competitive than ever. But running those advanced machines, it requires specific skills. Sally needs to hire, but has trouble finding qualified applicants. Now, meet Jack. Jack is a high school graduate looking for work in Localville. He sees Sally's help wanted ad, but he doesn't even apply for the position. He knows he's not qualified. Okay, now the distance between Sally and Jack, that's the skills gap. And right now, as many as 4 million jobs in America alone are unfilled because of it. To help close the skills gap and create more broadly shared prosperity in America and around the world, we need a real-time understanding of the skills needed for open jobs at the local level and training programs that prepare eager workers for those opportunities. That's why JPMorgan Chase has launched New Skills at Work, a landmark five-year, $250 million global initiative to bridge the skills gap.
The initiative is an opportunity to stop that hemorrhaging. This is a moment to actually underscore what we've known for a long time, which is partnerships between education, nonprofits, governments, and business is the solution. But we need to do it together, and we need to do it based on real data, not what we heard last week or what is a global presentation of information, but what's real locally on the ground. People get confused when they look at large data and they don't know what it means to their backyard. This is a moment, an opportunity with great leadership and a great investment to say we're going to do things a little differently. We're going to look at real data, real gaps, tied to real emerging markets and real jobs, and get that information to those who need it, who need to take those jobs in the future. This is a powerful initiative. It's an investment tied clearly to partnerships and an opportunity to take the craziness out of the marketplace that young people look at every day and say, how does that relate to me? And actually suggest that the relationship between industry, our communities, our schools, and our businesses is about making it work for the individual to grow an economy, a set of communities, and to once again become competitive internationally. So I represent a group of people who have been at this work for a long time. It's not just my organization, but I have to tell you, I am so proud that there's a company who's willing to invest in proven practice instead of the new shiny thing. Going after proven track records with research and amplifying that and scaling that is what we have been missing. So it's a pleasure to join you.
What you just heard was from a video presentation at the Aspen Institute live stream announcement in December 12th of 2013, where they were discussing a new collaborative project to address the skills gap problem. In the February impact, we had an opportunity to hear about how Henry Ford Community College is implementing their tech grant. Today, we will get a chance to hear from SME, which is a nonprofit professional organization that works for the benefit of the manufacturing engineering industry.
My name is Janine Coons. I'm the Managing Director of Workforce and Education at SME, responsible for all our areas of training and education for both today's manufacturers as well as tomorrow's with our youth.
All right. Now, when you say SME, what does that stand for again, SME?
SME was formerly known as the Society of Manufacturing Engineers, and about a year ago we rebranded ourselves to expand our reach and scope within manufacturing beyond just manufacturing engineers.
All right. Now, when I originally contacted your office, I was telling them about the TAC grant. And they said that you were familiar with that. And can you tell me what is your knowledge about the TAC grant?
Sure. I'm very familiar with the TAC grant, which is basically a federal program through the Department of Labor and the ETA office, which is Employment Training and Administration. Basically, the TAC grant has been around for several years, and it's targeted at various sectors, and in this case, focused on advanced manufacturing. Our organization has worked with TAC grants for many years, and we have specific relationships that are statewide in a number of states in the United States.
All right, and I'm glad you brought that up about it being statewide. I want to back up a little bit. When we say advanced manufacturing, because I know some of our listening audience are really not clear about the distinctions and everything like that. And part of when we get into the discussion about the TAC grant, it's going to be saying things about advanced manufacturing. What are we talking about when we say advanced manufacturing, and how is that different from what it used to be?
Advanced manufacturing is really addressing the ever-changing environment and landscape within manufacturing. Certainly, as you can imagine, there's been a lot more automation, a lot more on the programming side. Think of the electronics that are built into these machines, even from a maintenance standpoint, and really changing the landscape of what our workers in today's environment are dealing with in manufacturing.
All right. Now, manufacturing and engineering, are those two different distinct things? Was it emerging? So how, with the grant and stuff, how is that kind of impacting how is that affecting manufacturing engineering now? How does that type of grant affect them? Or is it helping, not helping, adding to what's going on?
So manufacturing in a broad sense would encompass engineering, but it also encompasses a lot of the production side. And I would say the TAC grants are really going after the community colleges and a lot of the high-skilled jobs. So you're talking about a CNC programmer, a CNC machinist, the welders that are certainly working in tandem with the engineering area within manufacturing. But the TAC grants go after more the skilled labor jobs within manufacturing.
All right. Well, then would the engineering side be a stakeholder, anything that comes out of the TAC grant, or is it just something that, augments or whatever?
I would say the engineers are certainly a stakeholder because they're part of the ecosystem of manufacturing. So they're certainly a recipient of the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Engineering, as you think of on the design side or engineering the process,
mm-hmm.
production jobs have to execute on.
Mm-hmm.
They all have to kind of work in harmony to really meet a business within manufacturers. Needs to produce parts, to produce automobiles, airplanes, etc. that that are required. So you need kind of both this engineering side and the production side. But in this particular case, the TAC grants are targeted at production. And as you said, engineer is certainly a stakeholder in that process.
Okay. Now getting back to SME, I always got to catch, start to slow down when I start giving out initials. Have any of the your organization? You said statewide. I think you're nationwide too. Is that correct?
We are nationwide and actually international, but mostly here in North America.
Okay. Have anyone from your perspective been submitted to the TAC to get a TAC grant? And if so, can you describe one of those situations for me?
Sure. Well, essentially, the heart of the TAC grants is, you know, preparing our workforce or those that are actually, the TAC grants go after the underemployed, the unemployed, dislocated workers, veterans. Those are kind of some key areas, I'll say, that are targets for
mm-hmm.
TAC grants.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to help fund our educational institutions, such as Henry Ford, to be able to better equip those that go through the education system to meet the demands of the manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that also is looking at, when you think of a lot of the adult learners, you think of a different way of learning. So a lot of the TAC grants require that there is a multidimensional way of addressing how people go about receiving their education. And SME and our Tooling You, our online training, has been part of a number of state initiatives because we're able to provide a very consistent form of education to augment what the school is doing hands-on with their students to provide that more consistent delivery and also more self-paced.
All right, so would I be correct in understanding that maybe some of the your membership might be the instructors that would be a part of this training?
No, actually, the majority of what we're doing, the instructor side of the education within the TAC grant is typically held within the college itself.
Okay, okay.
So we're augmenting that is with our online classes. We have about 400 online industry-validated classes. These are the same kind of training classes that are used with manufacturers all over the country. The top 500, manufacturers, the Fortune 500, are using our online curriculum. And so that curriculum is what's augmented with what the community college is offering with their hands-on instructors.
Like I said, in part of my research, I understand that they've got this OER, open educational, is it open enrollment?
Open source, you're talking about open source?
Yes, yes, right, okay. Is that part of what you're talking about, or is that something different?
No, it's similar. Ours is not open source. What you're referencing, Betty, would be there are certainly open source content providers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that's open source. This is something that manufacturers, like I mentioned, across the country would engage with our organization.
I see. Okay, so that's your version of the same principles. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's just not open source. Yeah, oh. It would be something that is made available, but it would be more through agreements and things like that with manufacturers.
Okay. Whereas now the local chapters here, how is that set up? I know is it a Dearborn's chapter? Is there how is SME organized locally?
We have we do have chapters locally. We have one here right in the Detroit area, our chapter 69. we have a number of chapters, as you mentioned, throughout the country, and a number here in Michigan. And that allows really members to come together, and we have both chapters as well as those for people who are out in industry already.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to network with other people like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Gain knowledge, share contacts, just learn from one another, problem solve. And so that's certainly a dynamic of our organization of 80-some years that we've kind of had in place to really bring people together.
Okay. Now, is there a student chapter here in Dearborn, or is there?
There is. I would have to, Betty, I'd have to look that up offhand. I don't know what student chapters we specifically have. They're typically tied to actually some universities.
Okay. All right. Okay. I I'm going to say about a year or so ago. I do know there's a student chapter within the area, but I'm not sure exactly who they're affiliated, which college or how they're set up. We kind of getting back into this employment crisis and things that's going on within the nation and things like that, do you see a change coming about as a result of efforts like the TAC grant, and or are there other things that, well, in addition to that, what other things you think are going on that's impacting the employment situation right now that Michigan is going through?
Sure. Well, I think Michigan is very similar to what we're seeing because we have the opportunity to work nationally. I would say what Michigan has experienced is very common throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
Preparing the workforce for high-skilled jobs is a local and a national issue.
Mm-hmm.
We found in our research that 9 out of 10 manufacturers indicated that they were struggling to fill their skilled workforce jobs. And, when we further dialogued and researched, well, what impact does it have on your business, manufacturers indicated some pretty big ticket items, and it was things such as meeting customer demand. We have people actually, I was in Jackson, Michigan, and someone told me they had to turn down a $1 million order because they didn't have the people to fill the jobs to run the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear about quality issues. You hear about just general production issues, innovation, and these are very significant elements that keep our local companies and our economy running. And so tying it back to the need for skilled workforce is significant.
Okay. Now I've heard this thing about skills gap, that's the terminology and things like that. And I've heard different descriptions of what skills gap is. Would the SME affiliates be a part of that gap, or is it just totally blue between the blue collar and white collar workers?
The skills gap is actually something that's happening certainly at the production side of manufacturing, but we're also experiencing it on the engineering side.
Mm-hmm.
We're also seeing it at supervisor level.
Mm-hmm.
You often sometimes see manufacturers take a very highly skilled person who's maybe their top person in production,
mm-hmm.
and they move them into management. That doesn't mean that they're a good manager, though.
Mm-hmm.
And they have good leadership skills. So they're also seeing gaps within the ranks of leaders within manufacturing. So while it's predominantly at the skilled workforce level, we also have seen in our research that engineering and management, that there's issues as well.
Okay. Now, I'm heard you reference, your information data gathering source. What have you, am I hearing right that you're doing research or data gathering? And if so, who has access to this information that you're gathering?
Yeah, we did research ourselves among, hundreds of manufacturers,
mm-hmm.
and asked them, questions along the lines of what is the skills gap, how are you going about solving it, what are you creatively doing, and things such as partnering with local community colleges is key. So that's where these TAC grants become very important, that really bring together both at a community level, both the employer and the educator, to build that skilled workforce for the specific needs and skills of the local employers. But the availability of our research, we're actually going to be publishing a white paper that will be here in the next few weeks that we will be getting out and will be available to anyone for viewing.
Okay. And I know I'm hopscotching around, so bear with me a little bit here. Okay. Now, as you mentioned when we first started out, that the TAC grant has been around now going on 4 or 5 years now?
Yeah, I believe it was 2010 when President Obama had kind of designated and signed the act.
Okay. In your data, and has SME been involved in kind of data gathering or resource information as to seeing what type of impact that grant has? Have you been, looking at that at all?
We haven't been looking specifically at the impact, kind of in a measuring research way, but I can tell you that, what the students, from the student standpoint, the student is really, because the TAC grant addresses the curriculum, it addresses equipment, so sometimes you're seeing that the schools are able to then fund and buy new equipment or kind of the latest, greatest, what's going on out in manufacturing, that we have found in some cases within some communities, there's students on a waiting list trying to get into these programs because the program itself is that much of a higher caliber. And then from the employer standpoint, they're able to go in and work with these local community colleges and hire graduates that are better prepared for the current skills needed by the employer because the employer is involved in dictating what those skills are.
Okay.
There's a lot of, you know, so while we don't have concrete data on that, we have seen anecdotally and certainly from, I'll call it just a programmatic standpoint, just a good model for bringing the key stakeholders together.
All right. Kind of like in that same vein, because I know that up in Alpena, they have a tech grant. Let me see. There's the Macomb County has a different tech grants, and from what I'm also learning that the grants is you know addressing different areas and different locations because like there is a consortium of grantees, you know, within the state, and we have some across the state. What are you aware of that, and is that a good thing, bad thing, or just what do you see happening with that from your information?
I think there's different, as you said, there's different ways to go after the TAC grants. And I think it's a good thing because it's really meant not to be, it's not meant to be one size fits all, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's meant to say what is needed by the local employers, what's kind of maybe unique to their space. So what we see out on the West Coast is different because it's very aerospace driven.
Mm-hmm.
And similar to what I understand Henry Ford did with partnering with some of the more automotive focused states. It was a multi-state kind of plan because it was, it really addressed those other community colleges that were in situations similar to Henry Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Macomb Community College, and through their research, they came out and said, you know, they wanted to focus on four key job sectors that they saw needs that were in the CNC machining area, welding, production operations, and multi-skilled technicians. So. Mm-hmm. I think having them differ is a good thing.
Okay. Does SME see themselves being involved in kind of application towards something like a TAC grant? And if so, what would there be benefit to SME?
Yeah, we do. I mean, because, you know, and there's a one of our states that we're working with is the state of Missouri. And I think it's a great example where a number of states came together, a number of community colleges within the state came together to address, you know, what they saw as the need within their community.
Mm-hmm.
But a really good example was a recent class of students was ranged from the age of 18 to 65.
Ah, okay.
So when you're looking at that, you can start to see where not, again, one size is not going to fit all. And so when they worked with SME and our online curriculum, they're able to provide those different students that are at different points in their career, their different ways of learning. They're able to provide them a different way or different options
mm-hmm.
in the same kind of knowledge. And so that's just how that whole education system is going now, right? It's a lot more customized and a lot more flexible to our individual needs, which is a good thing.
Okay. Now, given these kinds of things that are going on, will SME, how does, that these types of changes, does that change the direction or focus of some of your goals that SME has as far as addressing this employment need or concern?
I think it just helps a lot. I think it just supports. It doesn't necessarily change because what we do on an everyday basis is we work with both industry and academia. Even outside of these TAC grants, we work with about 500 community colleges across the country,
mm-hmm.
helping, again, if you think of this idea of that the education system can no longer just rely on instructor-led coursework or textbooks, you know, the world is just changing. So we do things all the way down into the middle schools even in providing just augmenting the curriculum, and there's a term called flipping the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Where it allows the instructors to do a lot more of the hands-on. In this case, let's say if you do have machinery or equipment, you can work on it. And then at night, you can take your online class and
mm-hmm.
replace a lecture.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it, Betty, I think it really aligns to what we already do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our main I'll call it just part of our mission as a nonprofit organization is to build the manufacturing workforce in tomorrow. And manufacturers, as I mentioned, 9 out of 10 are struggling, and we work with the manufacturers every day too. So they really have to make things, right? In the end of the day, manufacturers have to be making things. They have to make our next automobile and our next airplane. And so for us, while they as manufacturers have to be concerned and they have to invest too in their workforce, I think the education system and organizations like SME also need to be focused on what comes out of our education system into the workforce.
At this point, I want to revisit the guidelines that the Round 3 TAC grant has to address in their implementation of the grant so that we can get a frame of reference of some of the goals that the grant is using to overcome the skills gap, and also then get an idea of what the stakeholders who are going to benefit from this particular grant in the community can expect from Henry Ford Community College. Then after this overview, then we will return back to our interview with Janine Kuntz.
A key part of this skills agenda is meeting the needs of growth industries through next generation partnerships between community colleges and businesses that help employers find the workers they need and give workers training in high growth fields and providing workers with the relevant and user-friendly information that will help them choose an education and training program that will get them that good job. Recognizing that skills upgrading leads to increased earnings, the TAC program, with its emphasis on building the capacity of community colleges to provide quality education and training to more individuals, is a vital part of the administration's strategy to increase the number of American workers with post-secondary skills and credentials. Another essential component is providing workers with the relevant and user-friendly information that helps them choose an education and training program that will help them, again, get that good job. In the last 2 years, the Labor Department has awarded $1 billion in grants to over 600 colleges and universities working to expand and improve training opportunities by strengthening local and regional partnerships. Approximately $474 million is currently available through the third round of TAC funding announced on April 19, 2013. And labor hasn't done that alone. Just like today's webinar, all of our efforts have been done in partnership with our good friends at the Department of Education. According to the FY 2011 TAA for Workers Annual Report, TAA for workers participants were typically male, age 47 or older, who had not attained a post-secondary education and had an average tenure of 15 and a half years with their employer prior to their separation. For some community colleges, that's a new audience, and this grant money is there to help them build their capacity to meet the needs of these workers. The TAC grant program outlines priority areas and strategies that correspond to the needs of these trade-affected workers and addresses barriers to entry faced by adults who are older than traditional students, may lack academic skills, and have been out of both educational institutions and the job market for years. TAC also continues to support educational innovations at community colleges through investing in the use of technology and online education. This year's funding will award grants to community colleges and other eligible institutions that, number one, have forged strong partnerships with employers that result in work-based learning opportunities. Two, are using cutting-edge technology to create innovative learning models and to increase access to lower-cost training. And finally, those partners will be committed to tracking their own performance and sharing the value of their programs with potential students and the general public. One of the major changes in this round is the introduction of preconditions. Grants will be awarded only to applicants that meet certain preconditions for employer engagement, demonstrated labor market need, and rigorous program evaluation. Consortium applicants applying in partnership with other institutions will have an additional precondition to provide information on the steps taken to develop an employment performance scorecard to help prospective students identify and choose programs. And for the first time, the Delta Regional Authority is making up to $1 million available to support multi-state consortia applicants in the DRA service area. This includes prospective applicants from Alabama, Arkansas, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, and Tennessee. I know you join us in welcoming the Delta Regional Authority as another great partner in this initiative, particularly in those states where they have a footprint. America's community colleges serve as educational pathways to better career opportunities for millions of students each year. And we need to ensure that their curricula and training are aligned with the practical skills and competencies industries seek from those workers. Some innovative models have developed across the country in which community colleges are forging closer ties with local industry in designing coursework materials that lead to industry-recognized certificates and degrees. Many of these models combine in-classroom training with workplace on-the-job training opportunities. As a result of this mix of classroom instruction and applied learning, more students will be fully immersed in the workplace, ready to transition back to work and earn a family-sustaining wage. This year's round of TAC grantees will seek to further scale work-based learning, to catalyze the development of new models that are built on close partnerships between community colleges, industry, and trade associations. Every sector can benefit from these types of work-based learning models. But there is a particular interest in encouraging models targeting industries with unfulfilled demand. These industries might include in your region advanced manufacturing, healthcare, information technology, cybersecurity, and energy. Institutions awarded TAC grants will commit to use labor market information to identify the industries with the greatest need in their local area and to target those technical skills and knowledge gaps that will allow participants to find in-demand jobs. Online education offers opportunities for community colleges and other post-secondary institutions to provide accelerated and lower-cost forms of training. A number of institutions are applying new, emergent models of online education and workforce training through TAC. The first two rounds of grants sought to encourage the development of robust online learning models and promote broad use of technology-enabled learning components. The focus on online and technology-enabled learning required applicants to use innovative online and hybrid learning strategies. Strategies that were encouraged included interactive simulations, personalized and virtual instruction, games and strategies for asynchronous and real-time collaboration among learners and instructors. This third round will continue to promote innovative online and technology-based education models and applications, including the incorporation of advanced technologies that provides necessary flexibility for adult students who are balancing work and family needs. Encouragement of accelerated credential completion using technologies to implement rolling and open enrollment options, deliver modularized content, and administer competency-based and prior learning assessments. Encouragement of colleges to develop engaging instructional content that includes advanced technologies such as simulations, virtual work-based environments, gaming, and cognitive digital tutors. and an expectation that grantees will partner with other colleges and consortia, technology companies and employers, learning scientists and other experts in the subject matter, pedagogy, and software design and data management to develop the most innovative course design and development options possible. To maximize the impact of TACT funds, the department requires that applicants plan to utilize TACT-funded Open Educational Resources, OER, which include instructional content and assessments, applications, and infrastructure models. All proposed programs must include a data collection element that permits continuous improvement to the instructional program and provides insights that can help the entire community improve approaches to instruction. The administration is focused on making available to the public information on its investments to individuals seeking education and job training. All current TACT grantees report on outcomes of participants in each program of study, including key outcome indicators such as program completion, entered employment rate, employment retention rate, and credential and credit attainment rate. Some grantees did begin to offer new courses during the 2012 school year, and a total of 17,741 individual participants enrolled in these new or redesigned programs. These participants completed a combined total of 66,833 credit hours and have earned 1,199 credentials that are less than 1 year in length. 13,696 participants, or 77%, are currently retained in or have not yet completed their programs of study, and 745, 4.2%, continued on to other educational programs. The new round of TACT funding will be used to further advance the goal of helping students understand the value of training programs. All community colleges applying as a part of consortia will be required to develop a plan to track outcomes of students in their institution. Through working with other community colleges in the state and with their state unemployment insurance agencies, institutions will be asked to link data on all student performance to data on earnings and employment after graduation. This report will serve as a resource for students with basic information, such as how many people finished a training program, how many got jobs, and how much people earned after completing that training. In addition to being an important resource for students to make informed choices about training programs, the data they collect should also be used by the colleges as a way to continuously improve their current programs. As in the prior rounds, evaluations of these programs is important for showing the success of new models and leading to their replication. Today's session presents these important focus areas for the third round of the TACT grant program that include employer engagement, capacity building, and innovative service delivery. It features current grantees and nationally recognized experts who are sharing their experiences and expertise. Joining me in moderating are Jerry Fiala, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Labor for Employment and Training, and Johan Juven, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Education in the Office of Vocational and Adult Education. And now I'd like to...
And now we return to our interview with Janine Kuntz from SME. Okay. Now, another part of the TACT grant is the collaborative effort. And I, if I'm hearing you correctly, SME has a similar type of objective. Is that to bring the different stakeholders together in a common goal, or is that correct?
Yeah, we do. We have an education foundation, SME's Education Foundation, where we actually also provide grants and funding into. We focus more on the high schools.
Mm-hmm.
And because, as you know, we are concerned about the pipeline, the number of people who are even pursuing careers in manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
So in all those cases, core to our mission is this idea, as you said, bringing the key stakeholders together to really talk off of a common play sheet and have a blueprint for going forward. And it starts with what is needed in industry.
Mm-hmm.
And defining what those skills are and what we expect our employees for today and tomorrow to be equipped with, and making sure that that communication from the industry gets back into the education system.
Do you also see where there has to be a change in the how people view manufacturing? And if so, how is SME involved with that also?
Yeah, we do think that there is a lot of work to be done on how, you know, manufacturing is viewed. We are currently funding and researching, things as much as the career counselors in high schools. Mm-hmm. And are they equipped with the kind of information that is really arming them to understand what manufacturing is defined as today?
Mm-hmm.
And we also, as I mentioned, invest in a number of programs for our foundation, including an organization, if you get a chance to check it out, called Edge Factor. And it's very much focused on providing kits that go into the schools at a young age to really show what it is to manufacture, because a lot of people don't really realize, and especially here in Detroit, we sometimes just think it's all creating cars.
Okay.
When it's really almost everything around us is manufactured. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of cool advanced technology that goes into the intricacies of not only the engineering side, but the production side. So, we do invest quite a bit. We look at women in manufacturing and encouraging young girls and boys through various camps that expose kids to thinking through the science and the technology side of things, experimenting with their hands and making things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something I think that everyone has to be concerned about.
If you were looking at, looking at the whole overall picture of manufacturing, and what would you consider to be the priority for the manufacturing industry at this point?
I think it's a tough one. I have two big ones. I mean, I have a hard time picking, but I believe...
We got time. We'll talk about them both.
Okay. All right. Good. Okay. Well, two-pronged priority. One is we've got to address the skills gap, and we've got to address the fact that because it's inhibiting business right now, we know that it is, in some cases, becoming one of the largest issues that if you ask manufacturers to answer that question, they would tell you it's one of the ones that keeps them up at night. And there's a study that I'll refer to you, Betty, it was published about a year ago from Deloitte, and it addressed what was the top indicators of a country's competitiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And number one was having access to talented workers. And so when you think about the number one indicator of a country's competitiveness being access to talented workers, and we have our manufacturers telling us they're not doing so well at this, 9 out of 10 are having a problem, mm-hmm. that means our nation is at risk.
Okay.
Because we don't have access to talented workers like we need. And a lot of it comes to my second priority, which is the pipeline of kids going into manufacturing.
Okay.
So that's why it's hard for me to answer, because I think it's a two-prong. One is immediate, and the next one is that we're going to have a bigger problem. Every year that passes, the problem's going to get worse as the baby boomers retire, and that the fact that we don't have enough kids coming into the field.
All right. That's another issue. Are the baby boomers, and cause I guess right now, because, you know, there's always that the hard part is at that initial transition. Are the baby boomers and the high schoolers competing for the same jobs, or is it what's going on there?
That's a great example of it. You were saying are the jobs that are open the ones that the baby boomers are leaving?
Mm-hmm.
Yes and no. I would say that the biggest issue, as you can imagine, when a baby boomer leaves, very hard to replace, right? 30, 40 years of someone's experience. So especially in some of these production jobs, you've got people who have figured out all the tricks of the trade over those 30 years. And that's almost so hard to train for and replace.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what's happening is not only is that kind of tribal, very long-standing experience walking out the door, but then in some cases, the person who's coming in is not even sometimes meeting the main functions of the job and requirements.
Mm-hmm.
So the gap becomes very wide. But I would say manufacturers are addressing the baby boomers leaving in two ways. One is obviously to find new people to fill those positions, But because they know they can't completely fill the shoes sometimes of the 30-year veteran, they are also learning that creating standard work and documenting what's up in, you know, Joe or Jane's head has to happen before mm-hmm. George walks out the door. So there's a lot of that going on, too, within manufacturing. But the numbers are staggering in terms of what some people are faced with in terms of the percentage of workforce retiring soon.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about the local SME offices and what are some of the things that you're doing and what are you looking forward for your, I guess you say, your wish list?
Well, at local, we have, coming up here in June, it's called the Big M event, and it's involving a number of local, it's Michigan Economic Development Corporation, the Detroit Chamber, local employers, Dow, Detroit Diesel, various institutions on the education side, and really it's about recognizing the fact that Detroit, the Midwest, the Great Lakes region, and Michigan are a manufacturing hotbed, right?
Right.
And so it's bringing some of these issues to bear locally at an event in June that we're hosting and down at Cobo.
Okay.
And not only addressing, you know, kind of the basics, but also really getting at some of, again, back to your earlier question about what's happening within manufacturing. Why is it advanced? It's because you're getting more into digital manufacturing, advanced materials, 3D printing. You're getting into cybersecurity issues. Just a lot of issues that weren't there in the past for manufacturing.
Okay. As you were talking about that, I was thinking about the incomes, okay, that are levels that are available with the jobs, because I'm hearing like two types of jobs. It's almost like maybe three categories. The baby boomers are leaving, and that's for existing, but those existing areas are changing, so you got to have that part, and then you've got the new. Are the salaries or income levels, is there a difference in that? If no, what kind of what are we looking at when it comes to those kind of things?
I know the exact answer on that, but I will say that some of those jobs that we're struggling to find people to fill them, obviously, as you can imagine, you get into situations where employers are vying for those top candidates coming out of the school. So in some cases, they're getting some really nice offers
mm-hmm.
to fill those positions that sometimes someone might have thought, there's some great stories of kids that are coming out of the 2-year programs, and they like to talk about how they went through an apprenticeship program, and they had maybe some local employer support, and they've told me stories where they'll joke with their friends that went on to the 4-year program and have a lot of debt and are still looking for a job. So it's a situation of really weighing the whole package of uh-huh. what the education side costs and versus also that they're able to obtain in through their employment.
Okay. All right. I recognize that I kind of hopscotched around, but one thing I wanted to, you were mentioning about this thing that's coming up in June. Is that open to the public or is that just for those who are interested in manufacturing?
It would technically be open up to the public. There's different components. There's some, call it paid conferencing to go to the sessions that would be a little bit more technical. But there would be aspects of it for those interested in attending, it's you could go to the bigmevent.com
okay.
for information.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now, is there anything that you want to tell us about SME that I have not covered or did not address, anything like that? Anything I missed?
Yeah, no, I think that, the sole purpose of SME is to advance manufacturing and attract future generations. And certainly we are passionate and committed to that cause. Manufacturing is faced with a number of challenges right now, but also faced with a lot of really cool opportunities. This country has a lot of dynamics that are taking place. A lot of times we got focused about 10 years ago about jobs going overseas. And while that certainly happened, there's also a resurgence of what's called reshoring of manufacturing
mm-hmm.
going back to this country. So the key for us is to grab a hold of it and make sure that we don't lose the opportunity because we don't have the skilled workforce, because it quite honestly would be crazy.
Okay. If a person was not quite sure what area they wanted to go into manufacturing, what would be your recommendation for them? What would you advise them to do?
You know, that's a great question. I just recently was reviewing one of those kind of surveys that you take that helps you kind of select your path in life. And I wouldn't recommend one because I don't know, which one is the best one to do. But I think it's really those aptitude kind of things that really look at and align your interest and your skills towards mm-hmm. the kinds of careers that are out there. But I would say I would look more into manufacturing and not judge maybe what you knew from maybe your grandparents and maybe what they experienced in manufacturing, some time ago, because the landscape has changed a lot. I was just in a plant on Friday, and they're remarkably clean. They have a lot of technology, and there's just so many cool challenges that you can apply your passion towards, I believe, in manufacturing.
Would SME be a good place for them to contact and start if they wanted to have that kind of question?
Absolutely.
All right. Now's your chance. How would someone get in touch with SME and, to find out more about what's going on and kind of like maybe to be able to hold their hands through all this kind of a process?
I would say to go to SME.org, check out the website, and then certainly call our toll-free number that's on there, and that we would get you in touch again with either your local chapter, or we have staff here that will help guide through that process. I think we have a wealth of knowledge to kind of help navigate because manufacturing is made up of so many things, and not just automotive. Well, automotive we know here in Motor City is heart and soul to us, but there's a lot of diversification that's going on even here in Michigan with other industries.
Okay. Do you by any chance have that number handy?
I will get it handy.
Okay. Oh, we got time, because right now this is pre-recorded, so you can sit up there and go shuffle the papers and I can edit that out.
Looking it up right now.
Oh, goodness. Well, but thank you. This is really great because I have to thank you, because I've hopscotched around, but you were right there on the money. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, no problem. You did a great job and you had a lot of good questions.
Okay.
So I will go ahead and, give you, do you want to re-ask or you want me to 1-800-733-4764. Well, thank you, Betty, and thank you for your interest in manufacturing and education.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I also want to repeat that telephone number again for SME is 1-800-733-4763. So that's the SME telephone number. If you want further information about the manufacturing field and help and guidance and also coursework. So before we go out, I'm going to give you another overview of just what some of the consortiums that are have already started up with the TAC grant and how they're operating and functioning. Because earlier we heard from Joan Oakes, who is the Assistant Secretary of Labor and Employment and Training. And she was a part of a panel discussion that was giving an overview of what the round three grantees should expect as they begin to implement their TAC grant. So, and she also mentioned that there was a Mr. Johan Oben, who is also part of the Education Office and Vocational Adult Education Program. And he's right now, he will be telling us a little bit more about how the consortiums how they have been performing up to date, which is some of the guidelines that the Henry Ford Community College will be addressing.
Turn to Sue. Sue, your project, the STEM Consortium, is the largest multi-state consortium TAC-funded program to date. How are you utilizing a multi-state approach in the development of portable certificate programs that will address your campus's capacity issues?
Well, the National STEM Consortium is taking a new approach to creating new programs through multi-college collaboration. Instead of an individual college going out, seeing a need and creating a new program on its own, they're working together, bringing expertise from multiple colleges to the table to create new programs that are responsive to industry needs. We are 10 colleges in 9 states creating 5 new career pathways that ultimately will be 21 certificate programs among our colleges. We're doing that through 5 technical teams that are comprised of a subset of our colleges that are interested in a particular pathway. For example, 2 of our colleges are working on our electric vehicle program, 6 of them are working on our mechatronics program. some of our colleges are only working on one program, some are working on four. They bring to the table expertise in the form of faculty as well as industry leaders in their area. The first year of the grant focused totally on curriculum development. We started with a national meeting, and at that meeting we divided ourselves into five technical teams and got to work. We've had two national meetings since then, including one just last week, and we also have a biweekly conference call with all of our consortium members. At the same time, our technical teams meet weekly on the phone and have quite a few face-to-face meetings as well, and that's where they get the curriculum development done. Most of the work is done on the teams, but we recognize that they can help each other, so that's why we have the full consortium meetings quite frequently. The technical teams are creating their new programs through new curricula that they're working on, as well as existing curricula that the colleges are contributing to the grant. And in addition, we use some proprietary content because a lot of our, well, all of our programs have some embedded industry-recognized credentials. For example, our environmental program is including some OSHA credentials in their training, so we have to make sure the students get that content. The colleges themselves have to make sure that the programs meet their state and college approval processes. We also have a sixth technical team, which is an overarching, we call STEM Bridge, which provides remediation that we promised in the grant. This team, it includes representatives from all 10 colleges, and they are preparing a course that will involve basic math, business communication, professional skills, and critical thinking skills. All of our courses will, by the end of the grant, be available in Platform Plus, which is an open educational resource. And in fact, 2/3 of our STEM Bridge course are already up and running. We also have we've realized the importance of employer contributions. We have a national advisory board as well as local advisory boards. And employers and workforce agencies help us with knowledge, skills, and abilities, as well as curriculum contribution and review. Now, how does all of this build capacity? Well, first of all, at each individual college, these colleges are able to design a new program with help from other colleges. So it brings a lot more brain power to the table. It also divides the work and eliminates duplication. Also, this helps every college in the country. All of our programs will be available as an open educational resource. That means that if, suppose, an electric vehicle company decides they want to move into a new area of the country, that community college in that area can go to the shelf, take our program off the shelf, and begin to teach it. Now, another way that this builds capacity is through infrastructure. We're using a lot of grant funds for equipment, so schools are either building labs from scratch or updating their labs using grant funds so that their capacity to train is greatly increased. Our deliverables include not only the curricula, but also every element that goes into creating a new program at a college. We call this the continuum, and what that will be is a guide that will help colleges with budget, space, equipment needs, supplies, faculty training, templates, and even best practices so that they will know everything they will need to start a program from scratch. Our biggest contribution, we believe, to capacity building is we hope that we are a model for the process of creating new programs. We hope that in the future, when a college wants to start something new, first thing they'll do is see if it's already out there as an educational resource, and if it is, they'll use it. If not, we hope they communicate with other colleges across the country and try to pull together a team of interested colleges to work together to build a new program. And thirdly, we hope then that they put that out as an educational, open educational resources so that other colleges can take advantage.
A key lesson learned so far from your consortium work.
Well, this is something that people in Washington State mentioned as well, and that is hitting the ground running. Now, in Washington State, they have relationships already because they're all part of the same state. We have a lot of new relationships, but round three will be in a better place because they have 4 years.
The importance of manufacturing in the recovery of the U.S. economy is clear. And analysts agree that as confidence builds, investments in U.S. manufacturing will continue to increase.
So we are now seeing an onshoring of manufacturing in the U.S. What it means for the U.S. is we'll add somewhere between 2 and 5 million jobs in the next 5 to 10 years. But they're not going to be the jobs our fathers and grandfathers did. There are going to be new, highly automated, highly skilled jobs in the production environment.
Today in the U.S., there are more manufacturing jobs available than people to fill them, with a deficit of an estimated 7 million skilled workers. Many of these jobs remain open for a simple reason. We have a skills gap.
As we go through the analysis of what the jobs and the factory of the future looks like, it's a much more highly automated factory. It relies more on cyber-physical systems that are connected together and feed data constantly. And that's what we're talking about. We don't have people with those skill sets today.
A gap in skills, knowledge, and experience in our industrial factories is driven by many factors: an aging workforce, knowledge continuity and transfer, the return to America factories, which were offshored 20 years ago, and the rapid changes in technology needed to stay more competitive. Finally, skilled technical jobs have an image problem when it comes to millennials. As this generation enters the workforce, many have had no exposure to production skills, and old stereotypes have created a mass lack of appeal. So, how do we address and bridge the skills gap to keep America's manufacturers profitable and competitive? The worker of the future will need to understand automation technology, be able to enhance productivity, and work side by side with robots and other automated intelligence in a flexible and cohesive environment. That requires us to understand the competencies of our existing workforce, determine the skills needed in our new factories, and develop learning paths to close the gaps between the two.
Thank you for listening to Impact on this fourth Tuesday. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College, its staff, or students. Be sure to listen to our next Impact show on the next fourth Tuesday. This is WHFR Dearborn.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn, station making waves. My name's Kenny Lang, singer, songwriter, and storyteller. I'll tell you what.
WHFR, the station making waves, proudly presents The Best of Broadway, a program featuring the best of American musical theater. Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Joe, your host. We've taken care of your tickets. Now let me escort you through 2 hours of enjoyment of The Best of Broadway.